Chapter 18. Redressing the wrongs of my injured client, return the good notary. Yes, retorted Bintry. Your injured client is all very well, but a word in your ear. He whispered to the notary and walked off. When the notary's housekeeper came home, she found him standing at his door motionless, with the key still in his hand, and the door unopened. Abenreezer's victory, the scene shifts again to the foot of the Simplon, on the Swiss side. In one of the dreary rooms of the dreary little inn at Brieg, Mr. Bintry and Mater Voigt sat together at a professional council of two. Mr. Bintry was searching in his dispatch box. Mater Voigt was looking towards a closed door, painted brown to imitate mahogany, and communicating with an inner room. Isn't it time he was here? Asked the notary, shifting his position, and glancing at a second door at the other end of the room, painted yellow to imitate deal. He is here, answered Bintry, after listening for a moment. The yellow door was opened by a waiter, and Abenreezer walked in. After greeting Mater Voigt with a cordiality which appeared to cause the notary no little embarrassment, Abenreezer bowed with grave and distant politeness to Bintry. For what reason have I been brought from Neuchâtel to the foot of the mountain? He inquired, taking the seat which the English lawyer had indicated to him. You shall be quite satisfied on that head before our interview is over, returned Bintry. For the present, permit me to suggest proceeding at once to business. There has been a correspondence, Mr. Abenreezer, between you and your niece. I am here to represent your niece. In other words, you, a lawyer, are here to represent an infraction of the law. Admirably put, said Bintry. If all the people I have to deal with were only like you, what an easy profession mine would be. I am here to represent an infraction of the law, that is your point of view. I am here to make a compromise between you and your niece, that is my point of view. There must be two parties to a compromise, rejoined Abenreezer. I decline, in this case, to be one of them. The law gives me authority to control my niece's actions until she comes of age. She is not yet of age, and I claim my authority. At this point, Mater attempted to speak. Bintry silenced him with a compassionate indulgence of tone and manner, as if he was silencing a favorite child. No, my worthy friend, not a word. Don't excite yourself unnecessarily. Leave it to me. He turned and addressed himself again to Abenreezer. I can think of nothing comparable to you, Mr. Abenreezer, but granted, and even that wears out in course of time. In the interests of peace and quietness, for the sake of your own dignity, relax a little. If you will only delegate your authority to another person whom I know of, that person may be trusted never to lose sight of your niece, night or day. You are wasting your time and mine, returned Abenreezer. If my niece is not rendered up to my authority within 1 week from this day, I invoke the law. If you resist the law, I take her by force. He rose to his feet as he said the last word. Mater Voigt looked round again towards the brown door which led into the inner room. Have some pity on the poor girl, pleaded Bintry. Remember how lately she lost her lover by a dreadful death. Will nothing move you? Nothing. Bintry, in his turn, rose to his feet and looked at Mater Voigt. Mater Voigt's hand, resting on the table, began to tremble. Mater Voigt's eyes remained fixed, as if by irresistible fascination, on the brown door. Abenreezer, suspiciously observing him, looked that way too. There is somebody listening in there, he exclaimed, with a sharp backward glance at Bintry. There are two people listening, answered Bintry. Who are they? You shall see. With this answer, he raised his voice, and spoke the next words, the two common words which are on everybody's lips, at every hour of the day. Come in. The brown door opened. Supported on Marguerite's arm, his sunburnt color gone, his right arm bandaged and clung over his breast, Vendale stood before the murderer, a man risen from the dead. In the moment of silence that followed, the singing of a caged bird in the courtyard outside was the one sound stirring in the room. Mater Voigt touched Mintry and pointed to Abenreezer. "Look at him," said the notary, in a whisper. The shock had paralyzed every movement in the villain's body, but the movement of the blood. His face was like the face of a corpse. The one vestige of color left in it was a livid purple streak which marked the course of the scar, where his victim had wounded him on the cheek and neck. Speechless, breathless, motionless alike in eye and limb, it seemed as if, at the sight of Vendale, the death to which he had doomed Vendale had struck him where he stood. "Somebody ought to speak to him," said Mater Voigt. "Shall I?" Even at that moment Mintry persisted in silencing the notary, and in keeping the lead in the proceedings to himself. Checking Mater Voigt by a gesture, he dismissed Marguerite and Vendale in these words. "The object of your appearance here is answered," he said. "If you will withdraw for the present, it may help Mr. Abenreezer to recover himself." It did help him. As the two passed through the door, and closed it behind them, he drew a deep breath of relief. He looked round him for the chair from which he had risen, and dropped into it. "Give him time," pleaded Mater Voigt. "No," said Mintry. "I don't know what use he may make of it if I do." He turned once more to Abenreezer, and went on. "I owe it to myself," he said. "I don't admit, mind, that I owe it to you to account for my appearance in these proceedings, and to state what has been done under my advice, and on my sole responsibility. Can you listen to me?" "I can listen to you." "Recall the time when you started for Switzerland with Mr. Vendale," Mintry began. "You had not left England 24 hours before your niece committed an act of imprudence, which not even your penetration could foresee. She followed her promised husband on his journey, without asking anybody's advice or permission, and without any better companion to protect her than a cellarman in Mr. Vendale's employment. Why did she follow me on the journey? And how came the cellarman to be the person who accompanied her?" "She followed you on the journey," answered Mintry, "because she suspected there had been some serious collision between you and Mr. Vendale, which had been kept secret from her, and because she rightly believed you to be capable of serving your interests, or of satisfying your enmity, at the price of a crime. As for the cellarman, he was one, among the other people in Mr. Vendale's establishment, to whom she had applied the moment your back was turned, to know if anything had happened between their master and you. The cellarman alone had something to tell her. A senseless superstition, and a common accident which had happened to his master, in his master's cellar, had connected Mr. Vendale in this man's mind with the idea of danger by murder. Your niece surprised him into a confession, which aggravated tenfold the terrors that possessed her. Aroused to a sense of the mischief he had done, the man, of his own accord, made the one atonement in his power. 'If my master is in danger, miss,' he said, 'it's my duty to follow him too, and it's more than my duty, to take care of you.' The two set forth together, and, for once, a superstition has had its use. It decided your niece on taking the journey, and it led the way to saving a man's life. Do you understand me, so far?" "I understand you, so far." "My first knowledge of the crime that you had committed," pursued Mintry, "came to me in the form of a letter from your niece. All you need know is that her love and her courage recovered the body of your victim, and aided the after efforts which brought him back to life. While he lay helpless at Brieg, under her care, she wrote to me to come out to him. Before starting, I informed Madame Dor that I knew Miss Abenreezer to be safe, and knew where she was. Madame Dor informed me, in return, that a letter had come for your niece, which she knew to be in your handwriting. I took possession of it, and arranged for the forwarding of any other letters which might follow. Arrived at Brieg, I found Mr. Vendale out of danger, and at once devoted myself to hastening the day of reckoning with you. Defresnier and company turned you off on suspicion, acting on information privately supplied by me. Having stripped you of your false character, the next thing to do was to strip you of your authority over your niece. To reach this end, I not only had no scruple in digging the pitfall under your feet in the dark, I felt a certain professional pleasure in fighting you with your own weapons. By my advice, the truth has been carefully concealed from you up to this day. By my advice, the trap into which you have walked was set for you. You know why, now, as well as I do, in this place. There was but one certain way of shaking the devilish self-control which has hitherto made you a formidable man. That way has been tried, and, look at me as you may, that way has succeeded. The last thing that remains to be done, concluded Bintrey, producing two little slips of manuscript from his dispatch box, is to set your niece free. You have attempted murder, and you have committed forgery and theft. We have the evidence ready against you in both cases. If you are convicted as a felon, you know as well as I do what becomes of your authority over your niece. Personally, I should have preferred taking that way out of it. But considerations are pressed on me which I am not able to resist, and this interview must end, as I have told you already, in a compromise. Sign those lines, resigning all authority over Miss Benreiser, and pledging yourself never to be seen in England or in Switzerland again, and I will sign an indemnity which secures you against further proceedings on our part. Benreiser took the pen in silence, and signed his niece's release. On receiving the indemnity in return, he rose, but made no movement to leave the room. He stood looking at Mater Voigt with a strange smile gathering at his lips, and a strange light flashing in his filmy eyes. What are you waiting for? Asked Bintrey. Benreiser pointed to the brown door. Call them back, he answered. I have something to say in their presence before I go. Say it in my presence, retorted Bintrey. I decline to call them back. Benreiser turned to Mater Voigt. Do you remember telling me that you once had an English client named Vendale? He asked. Well, answered the notary. And what of that? Mater Voigt, your clock lock has betrayed you. What do you mean? I have read the letters and certificates in your client's box. I have taken copies of them. I have got the copies here. Is there, or is there not, a reason for calling them back? For a moment the notary looked to and fro, between Benreiser and Bintrey, in helpless astonishment. Recovering himself, he drew his brother lawyer aside, and hurriedly spoke a few words close at his ear. The face of Bintrey, after first faithfully reflecting the astonishment on the face of Mater Voigt, suddenly altered its expression. He sprang, with the activity of a young man, to the door of the inner room, entered it, remained inside for a minute, and returned followed by Marguerite and Vendale. Now, Mr. Benreiser, said Bintrey, the last move in the game is yours. Play it. Before I resign my position as that young lady's guardian, said Benreiser, I have a secret to reveal in which she is interested. In making my disclosure, I am not claiming her attention for a narrative which she, or any other person present, is expected to take on trust. I am possessed of written proofs, copies of originals, the authenticity of which Mater Voigt himself can attest. Bear that in mind, and permit me to refer you, at starting, to a date long past the month of February, in the year 1836. Mark the date, Mr. Vendale, said Bintrey. My first proof, said Benreiser, taking a paper from his pocketbook. Copy of a letter, written by an English lady married to her sister, a widow. The name of the person writing the letter I shall keep suppressed until I have done. The name of the person to whom the letter is written I am willing to reveal. It is addressed to apostrophe Mrs. Jane Ann Miller, of Groombridge Wells, England. Vendale started, and opened his lips to speak. Bintrey instantly stopped him, as he had stopped Mater Voigt. No, said the pertinacious lawyer. Leave it to me. Benreiser went on. It is needless to trouble you with the first half of the letter, he said. I can give the substance of it in two words. The writer's position at the time is this. She has been long living in Switzerland with her husband, obliged to live there for the sake of her husband's health. They are about to move to a new residence on the Lake of Nuchadol in a week, and they will be ready to receive Mrs. Miller as visitor in a fortnight from that time. This said, the writer next enters into an important domestic detail. She has been childless for years. She and her husband have now no hope of children. They are lonely. They want an interest in life. They have decided on adopting a child. Here the important part of the letter begins, and here, therefore, I read it to you word for word. He folded back the first page of the letter, and read as follows. Asterisk, 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 will you help us, my dear sister, to realize our new project? As English people, we wish to adopt an English child. This may be done, I believe, at the Foundling. My husband's lawyers in London will tell you how. I leave the choice to you, with only these conditions attached to it, that the child is to be an infant under a year old, and is to be a boy. Will you pardon the trouble I am giving you, for my sake, and will you bring our adopted child to us? Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.